It's time now for World Watchers International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and it's broadcast number 518, November the 8th, 1981. There was a cartoon in the Houston Post last week. I haven't seen it in the papers out here. Maybe you have. It's a large square piece of paper, and in the center is just a small bullet. And to the left are some quite large letters saying, "A device used in changing the course of history in less than 30 seconds." This is November the 8th, and soon, after you get these tapes in the East Coast or overseas, it will be the anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy, November 22nd, 1963. A little bullet does change the course of history, not only for that event, but many, many other events that have followed since that date or happened before. And I know too well by the studies I've done how many little tiny bullets have actually changed the course of history. And I like the cartoon, of course, the purpose of my 17 years research, and it will be beginning the 18 years in November, in two more weeks, has been to see who was firing those little bullets that did, in fact, change the course of history for every single nation on this planet Earth. That bullet didn't just go into John Kennedy or blow his head off. It affected our lives in every way that you could imagine. And there is an event in the newspapers that I take that can't be related to or directly linked or indirectly made through one to two parties for events that happened in Dallas, November 22nd, 1963. I don't believe that it will take 18 more years to finger who was doing the shooting from either end, whether the back of John Kennedy, from other buildings behind him, or who blew his head off at the fence. I think if we had 1,000 pieces of the puzzle, maybe there's 800, 900 in now, and there isn't a day going by that more information doesn't come in to fill in those pieces. It won't be too long now until you really know who was firing in Dallas and who killed President John Kennedy. There was an article this morning from the Knight News Service, a large article, a half-page story in the San Jose Mercury, "The Missing History in TV Networks News Tapes." It's by David Bensilli, and it's a long story about how the major networks are losing many stories that should have been recorded for all times. And they bring out a point, they say the results are uneven for the way the news is covered on TV. They said the Kennedy and Lee Harvey Oswald assassination footage is spellbinding, but the Bay of Pigs coverage is spotty, and the absence of the Abraham Zapruder film and a discussion of the Warren Report is regrettable, and so is the glaring omission of the Nixon-Kennedy debates, anything pertaining to Kennedy's rise to power, because as soon as he was shot in the head, Richard Nixon was being prepared prior to the assassination to become the President of the United States. He was groomed for that for a long time, and they make note of the fact that the coverage or discussion of the Warren Report is regrettable, because now it is only 17 years later, and the House Select Committee on Assassinations has said that there was a gunman at the fence at the grassy knoll, that there was a conspiracy to kill John Kennedy and Reverend Martin Luther King, and Congress has never gone into the Robert Kennedy assassination. So that part of our history is missing, and what is missing over NBC, ABC, CBS, the major networks, or even public broadcasting, is the real truth. The things that I can tell you on KLRB or other radio stations that is the truth is very badly missing from the people in this country who are entitled to know the truths, and a lot of the information is locked up in the archives for 75 years, and now 50 more years, the material from the House Select Committee. If there were no secrets, there would be nothing really to lock up. I hope this evening, or those of you who get this tape later, have had the chance or watched 60 Minutes. This evening's broadcast, November the 8th, out here in California, 60 Minutes and also back east. Frank Turple and George Kirkola were on 60 Minutes. I've been talking about those guys for 2 years on this program, since December 1979. This last week, there was a half-hour program about them on television, but this was 60 Minutes and a lot of coverage. And it was a very interesting interview because these men are very sure of themselves. They know what they're saying, and they had a lot of innuendos in the interview, much more than I expected. I thought it would be a complete cover-up of their activity with Gaddafi, but very little of the program is about Gaddafi. The program began with an introduction that Frank Turple and George Kirkola are not exactly household names. Back in July the 3rd in 1981, I was saying on this broadcast, get used to these names. They're not known to you yet, but they will become familiar. And I gave a list of people working with them and around them, and you will become familiar with those names in the next several years to come. These exposés will unravel more and more, and I don't believe that it will be covered up. Watergate was covered up. The Kennedy assassination was covered up. All of the things they have done in the past will not be told, but a lot of it will come out. They cannot cover up everything these men have done. They were arrested in New York in 1979 for selling 10 million rounds of ammunition to the New York Police Department. 10 million rounds is a nice sum of ammunition to sell to two people who they haven't said what purposes they were selling it for, but they said, we never sell to the Soviet bloc. There's nothing that they deal with that has to do with communism. They are violently anti-communist. They're anti-Semitic, too, but it didn't come out in this evening's program. They're living in Beirut, Lebanon, but they travel all over the Middle East. They were asked about supplying Idi Amin with torture equipment in Uganda. They sold him $3.2 million in torture equipment, $11 million in interrogation equipment. And they were very glib, and you just got to admire their honesty. They said, Turple said, well, this exists. I didn't develop the torture equipment. It's sold. All of this is made by United States suppliers. It's made in the United States. We sell material for rapid interrogation. And he said, what's the difference whether you use a hose in Mexico or whether you use electric equipment or tripods or whatever, strobe lights and chemicals in Uganda? What's the difference? It's made in the United States. And if you're going to make a buck, we're going to make a buck. And they said, what about Dow Chemical? And what about DuPont? And we built the torture racks, the medieval racks for the Shah of Iran, and they're used down at Colonial Dignidad in Chile. The CIA assists, makes them, manufactures, puts people on these racks and stretches them apart and quarters them up and does every kind of torturing device that you can think of. And these men know that the United States multinational corporations make the chemicals, make the poisons, do the experimenting, torturing. So they said there are just two people, maybe they said 15 or 20, doing this, and why not make a few million dollars? The major corporations do it, and they said this exists. We didn't develop it. They didn't design it. It's part of the American system and economy, and if we want to finger somebody, then really we have to finger ourselves and not them. They discussed the story that Jack Anderson had written about where Frank Turple was at dinner with Idi Amin, and there were 10 or 12 people there, and the head of the prime minister, former prime minister, was on the platter, and Amin took a gun out that Turple had given him and shot some more bullets in his head, and the head was severed and on the platter, and he said, well, he was a defense minister who was plotting a coup. And Morley Safer said, well, did you eat dinner? He said, sure, Amin ate dinner. We all ate dinner. Didn't think anything about it, so there's a head on the table. And Morley Safer said, what about the morality of this? And then Frank Turple said, what is the morality? And he made a remark that I'll go into at great length, if not this evening, on another broadcast. He says, Israel supplies and sold weapons to Amin. Moshe Dayan is a good friend of Idi Amin. He was a friend. And I have believed for a long, long time that Israel is a Nazi country dealing with Nazis, and these men are hard-ass Nazis. And he made it quite clear that Dayan is a friend of Amin's. And he threw it out in a sense that I didn't expect the interview to be very honest. Get your hypocrisy off my back. Say it like it is. So what? The Israelis sell the weapons. We sell them to South Africa, Argentina, Taiwan. I talk about it all the time. And Dion's a friend of Amin. They asked, would you sell these? Where do you sell these? Do you have any scruples? He says, never behind the block, meaning never the communist bloc. Now, they import Soviet weapons. They buy Soviet weapons. They're training people in Pakistan. They didn't mention that this evening. And then they can leave weapons in Afghanistan and say they're Soviet weapons. A Soviet tank was used when Sadat was murdered. They buy Soviet weapons, but then they can leave them and say the Soviet Union did it. They mentioned a friend of theirs who was killed last week by the IRA, and they said, don't you feel badly? Ken Howard was killed last week, and I was wondering if maybe this friend was one of those who was sacrificed. There were several broadcasts this week of people that had worked for them, and Edwin Wilson, who had hired them, said that he had threatened to kill each of them, and that's why they were talking now about their work they had done for Wilson. And maybe this Ken Howard over in Great Britain was one of those that was blown up because he wasn't going along with what Wilson wanted, and he was sacrificed, or they were giving Coca-Cola and Turple a lesson by having a friend of theirs blown up. They didn't seem grieved about it. They seemed to understand why he was blown up. And as I say, they mentioned explosives are sold. He says, how does Dow Chemical do it? How does DuPont do it? And you remember at the time Jimmy Carter was president, he had Peter Barnes putting $34 million into Mexico to put paraquate into marijuana to sell to this country. So the hippies, the anti-war protesters, there are no hippies, but the people using the grass may find 4, 5, 6 years from now that they have cancer, because they had these chemicals put into a substance that they knew that this particular generation was doing. And they said, ask about DuPont and Dow Chemical. Coca-Cola said, we are not immoral. And this was the interesting part that they got into when asked, are you immoral? He said, we are not immoral. When I saw what our government does and what they contacted us to do before our arrest in New York, and even after we were arrested, in spite of the arrest, our government asked us to make bullets with deadly poisons for United States weapons. Now, George Coca-Cola is the fellow that I've mentioned on these programs over and over. I had one broadcast, Who's Afraid of George Coca-Cola? Jeff Gerth doesn't write about him for the New York Times, or Philip Taubman, or Jack Anderson. None of the journalists, Seymour Hersh, will mention Coca-Cola's name because he heads Amstec Corporation in New Jersey. He does security for the Secret Service, the FBI, for Scotland Yard. He arms the so-called terrorists to make it look like the left. And he works with Mitchell Werbel and the Silencers, and he works for Edwin Wilson, the paymaster of the Bay of Pigs, and Theodore Shackley, who were behind the John Kennedy assassination, Wilson and Shackley, and Miami with the J.M. Wade group, going back to the Kennedy assassination, if not long before. These people were involved, and I think their security from arrest, their security of getting off charges, is that they know who they're related to and who they work for, and they were very assured of themselves, and it was an interesting program because they didn't consider themselves any worse criminals, I guess, than Lyndon Johnson or Jimmy Carter with Jonestown or Richard Nixon and the payoffs of the various murders of Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy. And that's how they got to be president, how Gerry Ford got to be president. John and Robert Kennedy were murdered. This is how Andrew Young gets to be the governor, the mayor, rather, of Atlanta, Georgia. He's on the balcony with Martin Luther King and keeps his mouth shut. They don't think anything of it. Their friend's head is blown off. Jesse Jackson was on that balcony, and as was Andrew Young. They keep their mouth shut like Turple and Coca-Cola. That's the game. They know the game. They know the rules, and they laugh. They laugh through the whole program. They don't consider themselves immoral. And in all truth, they're no different. They're simply an instrument of the major corporations to kill anybody who's in the way of getting tremendous profits. They said the government asked us, even after they were arrested in New York in December of 1979, to make bullets with deadly poisons to put into weapons. Now, these guys know about the Bay of Pigs. They were part of the team to keep trying to kill Fidel Castro. They were part of the murder of Allende down in Chile. I don't know, they worked with Conine, who was involved with the Diem murder, the Letelier murder in Washington, D.C., the Omega 7 bombings and murders in New York City and New Jersey, the Alpha 66 murders and bombings in Miami, the anti-Castro Cubans. They're involved with a world narcotics traffic that hasn't yet come up, and links to the murder of Judge Wood in Texas. They have expertise in blowing up aeroplanes. They work with Warbell and the silencers. And they're very matter of fact that what we know about what our government did before, this is what he said, and what they asked us to do, we were very surprised that they arrested us in New York. He said even after we were arrested, they wanted us to do government work. They gave us contracts designed for assassinations. This is what they said. We never thought we would go to trial in New York after all we did for them in the past. It reminded me of James McCord threatening to tell everything if he was charged at Watergate crimes, of E. Howard Hunt threatening his blackmail if he was pinned too tightly against the wall, of William Colby threatening Senator Howard Baker at the time of Watergate if they blamed the CIA for too much. All of these people have worked together, Richard Helms and William Colby and George Bush as director of the CIA and Vernon Walters. And he said they gave us contracts for assassinations. Now, all of this was about assassinations, what they did before, very little about Gaddafi. And that was the amazing part of the interview this evening. He said we never thought we'd go to trial in the past after all we did for them. We never thought we'd go to trial in New York. And, of course, the question is, what did you do before your arrest, which 60 Minutes never asked? Or what did you do for them? Or where were these assassination weapons going? They said the FBI came to them after they'd been arrested and said they wouldn't be alive if they testified on their past jobs. But if they left the country, nobody would stop them. And they left, and they're multimillionaires. They just left the country, and they're living overseas, and they're not coming to this country. What does government want from you, they were asked. And one of them, I forget which one, answered, probably I was privy to information on how Washington is done. Is that how LBJ was paid off when Kennedy was murdered? Was that how Otto Winnicker, the German, was sent to write the Warren Report? Is this how payoffs were made to Richard Nixon after Robert Kennedy was murdered? They know how Washington is done. They talked about payoffs. They talked about payoffs at the State Department with high officers, how they pay CIA agents to pass on information to them that is vital to other countries. Now, they're not spies for Moscow. These men are spies for the Fourth Reich. These are Nazis. These are hardcore killers. They are working for Nazi organizations that were set up after World War II, and they make no bones. And other articles and things coming out about who they are, what they are, and there'll be more on that later. They use classified information to pass on, and they are not going to be charged with treason because the CIA was set up by Reinhard Gehlen, of Hitler's chief of intelligence. Did the CIA know you were shipping explosives to Libya, they asked? They said, yes, they knew we were dealing with Gaddafi. This has been known for 7 years. They were recruiting active duty special forces of the Green Beret. They were working with active duty CIA people all along. That, in essence, is the interview of those men on 60 Minutes. And the thing that was so interesting about them was, I guess, their raw honesty in giving you a little tip of the iceberg and just letting it out. We're doing what everybody else is doing, and we may as well make our money from it, and we're doing more, but we'll come home, and they probably would get off the charges in New York. And they say we'll face the federal charges for shipping explosives to Libya because it'll never go to court on the basis of national security. So just drop the gun weapons sale in New York City, and they would be home free. Nothing like this would ever go to court. So that was the interview in 60 Minutes of Frank Turpel and Gary Corcola. I call him Corcola, and he's referred to as George in this program. He called him Gary. But there they are over in Beirut, Lebanon. There's a lot of Nazi training camps there. They're violently anti-communist, and Beirut, Lebanon is where Mark David Chapman went for 6 months. This was before he was in New York and killed John Lennon. And he went from Beirut back to Fort Chaffee, where Arkansas, where agents of these people, Theodore Shacklin, Edwin Wilson, and Turbul, were being brought over from Southeast Asia, Laotians, and so forth. So I think that they're very strong links. And on the anniversary of Lenin's death, I'll bring in the route of Mark David Chapman again and the links to this assassination team and the people that wanted Lenin dead and how these men worked for those people and have worked for them all along. I did two articles for Midnight Globe, that small paper that comes out in the newsstands and liquor stores, drug stores around the country. Last week, 2 weeks ago, I did an article, When Was Oswald's Body Switched? And it's a question of whether or not that actually was Lee Harvey Oswald in the grave, because the grave was cracked open and they couldn't have gotten through that steel in reinforcement, concrete reinforcement, the way they did, and the way the tombstone, evidently it was easy to dig under. The earth probably had broken the original casing. I don't know at what time or when, but I do have reason to believe that that body was switched. And I have more reason to believe after my favorite subject was in the newspaper this week, the last 2 days. Reports suggest that wasn't Eva Braun at Hitler's bunker. Many of you who listen to this broadcast in the college area, particularly in young people, are too young to remember the absolute confirmation that Adolf Hitler died and his mistress Eva Braun died, and detailed descriptions of Martin Bormann being with them just to the last minute. And then he escapes and the great lovers die together. Now there are records that she possibly may have escaped. These were in the Associated Press today, the British Medical Association News Review on the discrepancies of Eva Braun, and that in fact wasn't her in that bunker. Now, if they could lie so carefully about Eva Braun with all this identification, and if she in fact walked out of that chancellery, I assure you that Adolf Hitler walked out of there too. They walked together. They didn't just get married a couple of days before so that he could die and she would leave. And there have been many, many stories, there's as many accounts of their having left Germany as there are of the way they died. And I've talked about that many times on these broadcasts over the past years. So I update those programs, and many of you will see it in the news during this week. If you didn't see it today, the report suggests that wasn't Eva at Hitler's bunker at all. There are a lot of substitutions for people who were supposed to have died, and the person that is in that grave is not, in fact, there. And this story is just the interesting thing, because how do you separate Adolf from Eva, and who was buried with Adolf, and how would that happen? I don't believe it happened that way. They planned their strategy for 2 years, and I sincerely believe that they both left, and they left together. If 50% of the team left, and you can be assured that the other one just didn't die, and she left without him. There's no reason to believe that, and there's a lot of evidence that he left with her. Another article I did for the Globe just this last week, it's a quotation of another researcher and myself, that Mr. Renzo, who wrote the book on the Gemstone Files. It's an article called Howard Hughes Funded the JFK Assassination and the Murder of Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. And this article mentions Thane Caesar. He was the guard at Lockheed, and the allegations that I have made and other researchers have made for a long time that he was the person who shot Robert Kennedy and killed him, and that Sirhan is the front guy for this. This is just a short article. I did a couple of short articles about one on Howard Hughes and one on the Oswald grave. Apropos of this particular article, or these two articles, I got a telephone from John Meyer up in Canada. Johnny is going to be taken down to Los Angeles. He's been charged on, he says, a trumped-up murder charge of a man named Alfred Netter, who died in Beverly Hills at the Hilton Hotel in 1974. Johnny Meyer worked for the Howard Hughes Organization. He's the person who said in January of 1981 that there was no Howard Hughes, that the Howard Hughes is a CIA front. It's an agency that had control of the Hughes Organization. Johnny said Howard Hughes was not buried in Texas. He had a press conference. This was in January of this year, almost a year ago, that the Hughes Organization is just a CIA activity. using the Hughes Corporation as its cover. Now, Johnny was charged with this murder, and he's going to be taken down to Los Angeles. The trial is supposed to begin soon. And several people had testified against him. Interestingly enough, his partner was called Mr. Aaron Fried Liebich, E-H-R-E-N-F-R-I-E-D-L-I-E-B-I-C-H. And there often are these long German names, and this is one of the people that got tied in with Johnny Marr, and this Netter died at the Hilton Hotel, and he's being charged with this particular murder. And the FBI or the United States police, Johnny's had a heart attack, and they said, we'll take you down in an ambulance and we'll start the murder trial of this Netter case and charge you with the murder. We're going to drag you down to Beverly Hills. And Meyer was offered, he told me, and I believe it was on the national radio or television this week, he was offered immunity, or they dropped the charges of the Netter murder, if he would turn over all of his papers on Howard Hughes and the Hughes organization. I asked Johnny, he called me this week on the telephone because there was a two-part deal they made with him. The first part was turn over everything you know about the Howard Hughes organization and we'll drop the charges. And the second thing is, do you know Mae Brussel? How well do you know Mae Brussel? When did you meet her? He said, she has nothing to do with what I know. He says, what is your relationship with Mae Brussel? And he was with his lawyer, and he's going to send me a copy of the agents that were with him this week. And he says he was under tremendous pressure. He knows he was set up. And they might have thought, or they know that I've known John Marr, but I've gotten none of my research. Well, I'll take that back. I did get a whole packet of papers, about 150 papers that were in the hotel when Vance Cooper died in Mexico. That was the double for Howard Hughes that was buried in Howard Hughes' grave. And most of the things down at the hotel were put into shredders, and some of it was sent up to the Canadian police and copied. And Johnny Marr sent me about 150 or 200 pages of very important documents directly copied from papers in the hotel at that time. It was 1976. But outside of giving me that packet, the article I wrote about the Hughes organization being a cover for the assassination is nothing that I got from Johnny Marr at any time. I haven't done research with him. He told them we hadn't, that he knew me personally. I met him through the telephone conversations through Terry Moore in Los Angeles, who I was working with on some stories, and she's been very close to Johnny Marr. So I don't know what trouble the feds will do, or whether they'll try to plant information on me like they did on him, or trumped up charges, or just what they have in mind. But they were giving a lot of pressure to him about Mae Brussel, and he was a little bit scared about it. So he called me and warned me that they were trying to make some connections between him and me. A lot of work I know I've done through hard research. I said that wasn't used in the grave long before I ever dreamt that I would be talking to Johnny Myers, and I published that for Playgirl. He confirmed these things. I said to him on the telephone, answer me I'm going to ask you four questions and either say yes, yes, or no, no to these questions. I'm going to ask you four questions. Did you know or work with Edwin Wilson? Yes. Did you know Frank Turple? Yes. Did you know Thomas Klein? Yes. Did you know Theodore Shackley? Yes. That's all I had to know. He told me he knew all four of them, and these people are very important to the whole era of American history. That's why I said the way the bullet flies in 30 seconds changes American history. I did talk about Johnny. This was in January 1981 on tape 477. If you have those tapes on what he said about the CIA and how they controlled Howard Hughes, they're going to drag him down. He won't turn over any papers he has. He thinks it's none of their business. They're going to drag him down to that trial in Beverly Hills, and it'll be interesting to see what they produce against him or what they try to do to him. Speaking of the Sirhan case that was done by Thane Caesar, that I mentioned briefly in that article, there is a magazine called South Bay that comes out of the West Coast here in the San Francisco area, October 1981. And there's an article about Sirhan and quotations of Dr. Edward Simpson Kalas, who lives here on the peninsula, and the mind control of Sirhan and how he is controlled by the federal agents, and how Mr. Van de Kamp, the district attorney in L.A., keeps wanting to keep Sirhan in prison and lock him up. And a lot of people believe that he did not fire those fatal bullets into Robert Kennedy at all. Interesting thing in this article, it mentions that Mr. Van de Kamp has an interest in the RFK assassination. It began immediately afterwards when he was headquartered in the Washington, D.C. offices of Director of the U.S. Attorney General's Executive Office. I didn't know that the District Attorney of Los Angeles, Mr. Van de Kamp, John Van de Kamp, L.A. District Attorney now, was working in Washington, D.C. in the U.S. Attorney's Office at the time Robert Kennedy was assassinated, and then tore out to California to be sure that Sirhan stays in jail. And, of course, they've kept a lid on working with Thane Caesar and who really killed Robert Kennedy. And that Thane Caesar worked for Lockheed. Again, going back to the Howard Hughes organization, he was a guard at Lockheed and is active with Nazis in California at the present time. We'll take a one-minute break and then get back to some other news stories of the week.